All right, you guys can open up to the book of Proverbs. Like we have the last couple of times, we will be a little bit all over this book, but you can start in Proverbs 26. That is where we will kind of kick things off, I think. Got a lot for us to look at this morning, a lot for us to talk about. 1 week off of worship serve and a little hard work, moving around some mulch, cutting down some trees and such. We're right back at it. We're picking up in our series, Fishing with Dad. A series based on the book of Proverbs, based on the idea that the book of Proverbs is kind of like a culmination of trips with your dad out on the lake, kind of like going out on the lake, and as the sun sets and the fish are kind of nibbling a little bit, the dad shares a little bit of sage advice, a little bit of advice about life. As the boat gets lowered into the water in the early morning hours before the day starts, just little tips that are shared, real advice for real life. That's kind of what the book of Proverbs is. Not a lot of theory here, just a reflection on the best way to live life and to do it in the fear of the Lord. And today we're going to talk about a topic that is near and dear to my heart. It's been one that's kind of been on repeat in our house for the last few months, especially during the summer, one that we've talked about a lot. Sometimes it's talked about with kindness and encouragement, and other times it's talked about with a little fire in my eyes and a little anger in my voice. If you were to ask my kids what the number one rule in our house is, they would tell you, do not lie. We covered that one a few weeks ago when we talked about the power of words. But if you were to ask them what the number two rule in our house is, they would tell you, don't be lazy. Don't be lazy. Now, just to be clear, that's a rule in our house, but at the moment, it appears to be a rule that is made to be broken. So that's where we are trying to figure this out. This is one that is not universally obeyed by any of us in our house, but one that we are constantly working on, and it is definitely a rule. Now, I know we've got some hard workers in here, and I'm just going to ask, this is not rhetorical. I really want you guys to kind of shout answers at me. This is not something we normally do, so I kind of need to preface that. But I'm curious, because I know we have some hard workers in here, some people that have done some real labor, but to quote a book that I'll reference here in just a few minutes, a guy named Ben Sasse says he's never met anyone who has ever done anything, or he's never met anyone who is interesting who hasn't at least some point in their life done hard work. So I'm kind of curious, what kind of hard work has been done in this room over the course of a lifetime? Now, don't be ashamed. Some of you would be ashamed to talk about this, and you want to be like quiet about it. You don't want to draw anything. Others of you are like, yeah, I'm going to tell you what I did because I worked my tail off, and I would like to brag about it. So I'm kind of curious. So for me, the hardest work I've done working at UPS by far, 3 o'clock in the morning loading trucks. That is no fun at all. As a kid, I had all kinds of chores. I mowed lawns and I did a lot of that kind of stuff. I'm curious, what other kind of hard work have we done in this room? Give me some stuff, guys. What's that? Natural childbirth. All right, you had to throw the trump card on the very first one. All right, I appreciate that. Everybody else will now be quiet after that. So what else? What's some other stuff that we done? Cutting tobacco. All right, I've heard that's pretty rough, so. Calm and angry taxpayers. That's everyone, isn't it? I think we're all angry taxpayers at this point. So what else? What's some other stuff that some folks have done? Waiting tables. All right, yeah. Yeah, I've seen many a waitress where I've said, I'm glad I don't have her job right now. So what's that? Selling cars, all right. Loading tile. Yeah, heavy stuff. Yeah, yeah. Anybody else? John, you're not even going to say farming? You're not going to stand up for the farmers? All right, good deal. All right. So I know we've got some hard workers in here. I know we've got some people that have done a lot of stuff, that have been in the back of trucks, have been out in the field, have done a lot of different things like that. The book of Proverbs has a lot to say about hard work, about laziness. And the guy we're going to meet today has a lot to say about this guy. This guy is the sluggard. The sluggard. Now, this is not a word that I need to define for you this morning. You don't need to know the Hebrew behind the word sluggard. It's pretty self-descriptive. Sluggard. You know what you're talking about when you hear somebody talking about the sluggard. And so we're going to meet him. We're going to talk a lot about this guy today. And to start, there's a few resources I want to recommend to you because I would love to make this morning about the way that you worship God in your work, in the things that you do, in your career. Unfortunately, I don't have time for that. That's a whole other series we would have to do. But I do want to recommend some resources to you. The first one is this book. It's called The Gospel at Work. The Gospel at Work. It's by a guy named Sebastian Traeger and Greg Gilbert. It says, How Working for King Jesus Gives Purpose and Meaning to Our Jobs. It's a great little book. It's a good read. If you are struggling with how do I connect my job and Jesus and my faith, this book will help you with that. Another book is by Tim Keller. If you've been around a lot, you know that I recommend books by Tim Keller a lot. It's called Every Good Endeavor. And it's the same kind of idea, connecting your work to the mission and the gospel. It's a great, great book to read. I haven't read through all of that, but I've read enough of it, pieces of it, to know that it's a good one to recommend. And then this last one is not an explicitly Christian book. It's by Ben Sasse. He's a senator from Nebraska. And it's called The Vanishing American Adult. Now, this book, and I'll probably end up quoting a little bit from it. This book has been great. I'm almost finished with it, and if you're worried, like, oh no, this is a senator, then I'm not interested in politics. This is not about politics at all. Doesn't talk about politics, policy, being in the Senate, doesn't talk about any of that stuff at all. So don't be scared away by that. I'm not kidding when I tell you, as I've read this, I've thought of about seven or eight people that I've thought, I've got to get this book in their hands, because it is a great book. And I'm not kidding when I tell you, every parent in here should read that book. Every parent should read it. It talks about where our culture has kind of gone off course in raising kids and how it seems to be impossible for, or not impossible, but extremely difficult to raise kids that have a certain, really that are just decent human beings at this point. So it talks about how to do that. And it goes through different things. And one of the things that he hits on, one of the chapters, is about the value of hard work. He talks a lot about that. So I want to recommend those up front. I want to just kind of lay that out for you. And in the interest of time, I'm probably not going to share a story from that this morning, but I wanted to, and instead I'll let you guys go and get it. I strongly encourage that you get it. But for far too many of us, we hear the story far too often of what seems to be an entitlement culture, a culture that doesn't want to work, doesn't want to do things, doesn't want to go out and do things, and that work ethic seems to be one of the vanishing character traits in America. The thing about work ethic when you start talking about it, the thing about laziness whenever you start talking about it, is nobody thinks you're talking about them whenever you say this. As we start this and I start saying laziness and work ethic, immediately you have people in your mind, maybe a teenager that you know in mind, maybe someone else that you know in mind, maybe an in-law or something like that. You have others in mind where you're saying, this is a good message for them to hear, and you're already ruling yourself out because you don't think that you're lazy. No one thinks they are lazy. Even the person who recognizes they could be called lazy has an excuse. They're victims of something. They're victims of something. They're limited by their circumstances. They're doing enough to get by, but they can only do so much. Solomon has a lot to say to us this morning about working hard. Now, he does it primarily by looking at the negative, not so much looking at hard work, but instead looking at laziness. He looks at the negative side of it, not the positive. He talks about the folly of laziness, and he does it by looking at this guy, the sluggard. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through and we're going to look at just a handful of characteristics about this guy, the sluggard. And we're going to see what it means to live in light of these warnings that we receive from Solomon. Again, it's not hard to define a sluggard. It's pretty clear what we're talking about, who we're talking about. So I don't want to spend time on that. But just as we go into this, it's fine if you want to think about other people, if you want to think about even your own kids, if you want to think about how you can kind of talk about these type of things with others, but don't quite rule yourself out of this characteristic just yet. So the first characteristic that we can look at of the sluggard, the first characteristic is that the sluggard is easily mocked. The sluggard is easily mocked. If you're like me and you feel that at least part of the way God has gifted you is with the gift of sarcasm and snark, then this morning there's plenty here for you. You'll recognize how some of these sound from the book of Proverbs. When Proverbs describes a sluggard, then the author is often very, very harsh, pretty relentless in his mockery. Look with me in Proverbs chapter 26. Proverbs chapter 26, verse 13. The sluggard says, "There's a lion in the road. There's a lion in the streets. As a door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed." The sluggard buries his hand. I love this one. This is actually in Proverbs twice. It's also in chapter 19. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, and it wears him out to bring it back to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. That is full of mockery there. Don't take that literally. Take that as Solomon is mocking the lazy sluggard. This picture of a man that can put his hand in the bag of chips, but he can't even be bothered to bring the Cheetos up to his mouth after his hand gets into the chips. It can maybe move the chips over to the guacamole, but going from the guacamole, because that stuff's heavy, into your mouth is too much. That's the picture that is given here. Just the dude that falls asleep on the couch with his hand in the bag of chips and stays there. That's the picture he's giving here. As a door turns on its hinges, so this guy turns in his bed. What's he getting at there? A door on its hinges is effortless. It moves back and forth without really going anywhere. So is our friend the sluggard here. No effort. Sleeps till noon, one, two, whatever. Just kind of rolls around. Just blah. Doesn't even try to get out of bed. Just there, just wallowing around. The writer of Proverbs is mocking this poor soul and his total disregard for life and effort or anything else. Chapter 12, verse 27 says, "Whoever is slothful will not roast his game, but the diligent man will get precious wealth." It's talking about a man that will go out, he will hunt, he will get his food, he will put forth that effort, but once he gets his food, he won't take the steps to dress it, clean it, and cook it because it's too much work. He's too lazy. It's a job half done. It's a job started, but not a job finished. It's a job begun, but not one completed. He does some of the work, but he can't be bothered to do all of the work. And so the writer of Proverbs is saying, what good is it for you to start the job if you're not going to finish it? What good is it for you to empty the trash can if you're just going to sit the trash bag right next to the trash can and not take it to the dump? What good is it for you to sweep the floor if you're just going to leave a dirt pile in the floor? What good is it for you to type up the paper if you're too lazy to print the paper, format it, proofread it, and turn it in? It doesn't matter. It makes a mockery of the task you're trying to perform, and it makes a mockery of the person that can't finish the job. So here's the point that I'm trying to make in this. If you're lazy, you open yourself to mockery and rebuke. Don't complain about how people don't like you. Don't wonder why you can't get a girlfriend. Don't wonder why people don't want to be around you. Don't wonder why people won't hire you or why they constantly fire you. Don't wonder why people mock you when you sleep all day long, when you don't get your stuff done. You invite judgment and humiliation on yourself. You are the reason that this is happening if you are lazy. You say, well, people just don't understand. I've got this and I've got that. I've got all these different things going on. I have reasons why these certain things have to happen. I have reasons for this. I'm glad that you said that, because that brings me to my next point. The sluggard is full of excuses. Number two, the sluggard is full of excuses. Back to Proverbs 26 in verse 13. It said, the sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, there's a lion in the streets. Now, that's a weird verse if you stop and think about it. What is this lazy guy talking about? It says, the sluggard says, there's a lion in the road, there's a lion in the streets. Now, you would expect, if it's talking about a lion in the streets, what it's saying, what you would expect is for it to say, the coward says, the scaredy cat says, the chicken says. You would expect it to say something like that, but it doesn't. It says, the sluggard says. Why does it say that? What's Solomon getting at here? The point he's trying to make is that the idea that there's a lion in the streets is silly. It's ridiculous. It's a completely made-up excuse. It's not there. It's a figment of this guy's imagination. There's nothing true to it at all. There is no lion in the streets any more than there is a dragon in the streets. But that doesn't stop the sluggard from complaining and making excuses. He has an excuse why he doesn't work hard. He has a reason why he can't get up and get out of bed, because there's a lion out there. Is it a legit excuse? Of course it's not. But it's one that's good enough for him that will keep him on his tail on the couch and doing nothing. It doesn't matter if it's legit. The excuses will fly anyway. When you read stuff from that first point about the mockery we talked about, it's easy to assume that you're no slugger. After all, you could put away a bag of Doritos, no problem. So you have no trouble getting the Doritos from the bag to your mouth. So you're not that guy, right? You're not that person. But you have to remember, those are exaggerations for the purpose of mockery. You may not be the extreme of the example that Solomon offers, but you, if you're like me, can probably relate to this on some level. A better way to diagnose yourself is not, am I as bad as this person they're making fun of, but instead to say, does this look like me at all? Do you find yourself making excuses a lot? Do you find yourself wishing you had started something earlier, wishing you had finished something sooner, wishing that you had gotten ahead of something? Always find yourself behind in stuff, and then rationalizing why you let these things happen and why you put yourself in this position. Do you justify? Do you excuse things away because you feel like you're okay with this? Do you never really take ownership of the problem? If that's you, then the book of Proverbs may be talking about you. Here's the funny thing about being lazy. You can be very, very busy and still be very, very lazy. Busyness doesn't mean that you're not lazy. Just because you're busy doesn't mean you work hard. In fact, there's a whole host of folks that I know that are plenty busy, and they are busy because they are lazy. They find themselves chasing their tail because they've allowed themselves to get so far behind, and so they're constantly on the back end of the treadmill, just about to fall off of the treadmill because they haven't worked hard enough to get ahead. In high school, I ran across a quote. It's become something of a mantra for me in my life. It's one that I don't even say the whole quote at this point, but I used to put it on every notebook that I had. I had it above my door when I walked out of my room in my house. I had it under the bill of my ball cap on my baseball team. And you know, guys that play baseball, whatever goes on the bottom of the bill of your ball cap, that's sacred stuff, whatever you write right there. So I had that there. And it's a quote from Lou Holtz, and it says, "Don't tell me how rocky the sea is, just bring the ship in." Don't tell me how rocky the sea is, just bring the ship in. That became something of a mantra for me. It's something that I will tell myself all the time when I feel like life is getting hard, when I feel like I've messed up and I'm not in the right position for me to be able to pursue certain things, whenever I feel like I've gotten behind, I've gotten lazy, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to the goal that I have in front of myself. I will constantly tell myself, just bring the ship in. Doesn't matter what else is there. Doesn't matter what gets in your way. Just bring the ship in. A great step for you in fixing your laziness, if you feel like you identify with this on some level. I'm not saying that you're at the level to be mocked, but you identify with this on some level. A great first step would be to adopt this motto. Doesn't matter how hard it is. It doesn't matter what gets in your way. It doesn't matter what you have to overcome to do it. Just get the job done. No excuses. You eliminate your excuses, and you are going to have a much harder time being lazy. So that was the second thing. The sluggard is full of excuses. The third thing about the sluggard is the sluggard makes everyone's life more miserable. The sluggard makes everyone's life more miserable. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 26 says, "Like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him." You ever go to a campfire or to like a fire pit and you're there just to roast your marshmallows and get your s'mores, hang out with friends, and you get everything kind of sit around and there's all these chairs around and you go and you pick the one chair where the smoke is nowhere near you. And then like magically within about 30 seconds, the wind shifts and the smoke just follows you to that place. And you sit there for a couple of minutes and you're like, I can't breathe. This is driving me nuts. Your eyes start to water and you think, well, surely the wind will shift. There was no smoke here. It never does. So then you get up and you move to a different seat. And within about 30 seconds, here comes the smoke right over here to your place, right in your eyes. You can't breathe again. You do that 3 or 4 times and eventually you say, you know what? I'm done. I'm going inside. That's enough of this. This smoke is all over the place. It's driving me crazy. I can't see. I can't breathe. I can't do anything. You give up. You go away because it's awful. This is what everyone else thinks about a lazy person. They just want to get away from you. They just want to get away. They move away. They don't hire them. They fire them. They try to avoid them. They don't want to be friends with them. Certainly nobody wants to marry them. They just want to be away from you. If you're a lazy person, you're like smoke in their eyes. Nobody wants to hang out with the lazy guy. And you know what? They're smart for doing it. They're wise for doing that. It's the lazy guy that is the fool in the book of Proverbs. And it's because the lazy guy lives a life that affects everyone around him in a negative way. Let's look at it a different way. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4. The sluggard does not plow in the autumn. He will seek at harvest and have nothing. When you are a lazy person, you put yourself in a very difficult position. You're not going to have what you need when you need it. Because you've been too lazy to put the seed out, to grow it, to tend to it, to care it. So when it comes time, care for it. So when it comes time to eat, you'll have nothing. And at that point, you're going to be dependent on a couple of things. Somebody else to bail you out and to help you, or someone else to have sympathy and compassion on you. You're not going to have what you need when you need it. If you're in a family, your family won't have what it needs when it needs it either. If you're in a church, your church won't either. If you're in a community, your community won't either. The nature of laziness is that it seeps out into the rest of your relationships like an open sewer, and it contaminates all of it. If you're lazy, your kids feel it. Your spouse feels it. Your church feels it. This is not a sin that just affects you. It affects us all. So work hard and prepare and put yourself in a position where you are not saying, oh, I would love to help, but I can't because this happened. Oh, I would love to be able to do this. I would love to be able to have you over, but I can't because of this, because I don't have any food, because I can't afford it, because I can't do this, because I can't do that. I would love to be able to do these things, but I didn't take care of the things I needed to take care of, so now I can't help you the way that you need to be helped. Prepare. Work. Consider the future. In Proverbs chapter 6, you don't have to turn there. In Proverbs chapter 6, it talks about consider the ant. Consider the ant, how the ant works so hard. The ant has no boss. The ant doesn't need anybody to tell you what to do. The ant doesn't need anyone to come along and say, ant, you need to store up from the winter. The ant just does it. Don't wait on someone to tell you what you need to do. Just do it. Don't wait on being told, hey, go and do this and go and do that. Instead, prepare and move in that direction so that you are ready when the time comes. Number 4, the sluggard ultimately fails to get what he wants most. The sluggard ultimately fails to get what he wants most. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 4. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. Do you see the irony in this proverb? Do you see the irony in the way this is laid out? The sluggard wants, he craves so badly. He's craving certain things. But he refuses to do the work that is required to obtain those things. He just thinks, I have these wants, therefore these wants should be met. he wants so badly. So badly, he wants these things to show up in his hands. But because of his laziness, he will end up with nothing in the end. Kids, do you guys hear this? Students, y'all hear this? Do you want something in this world? Do you want something when you get older? Can I just tell you that wanting something is not nearly enough? Just because you want it doesn't mean a thing. There's a lot of people that want things. But people that want things, that's all of us. It's the people that work hard that have the opportunity to obtain these things. Look at the back half of verse 4. While the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. If you want something, work your tail off to get it. That's what it means to be diligent. You work hard. If you're lazy, you will work hard and you will want things that you will never get. It's the irony of the sluggard. All he thinks about are the things that he wants instead of doing the things that he needs to be doing to obtain those things. He'll never have what he wants because he's too lazy to get it. Now remember, we're talking about Proverbs here. There's some of you that are in here thinking right now, wait a minute, I work my tail off and I still don't have nothing. I still don't have any of these things that I thought that I would have. And I work harder than anybody else I know. Listen, this is the way the Proverbs work. In general, this is true. But ultimately, this will be true for all of us. Good, hard work is a reward. Even if you don't obtain all the things that you want, working hard is a reward. But if you're lazy, you don't get the reward of hard work, nor do you get the reward of the things that come along with it. And then ultimately, it will kill you. Proverbs 21:25 says, "The desire of the sluggard kills him, for his hands refuse to labor." The desire of the sluggard kills him. Ultimately, the sluggard dies for his refusal to work hard. He dies a little in life. Those around him die just a little bit around him. And eventually, he just dies. And then everyone will sit back and look at the sluggard and say, "Oh, what could have been? Oh, what could have been?" Don't let that be the epitaph to your gravestone. Don't let that be what's on your gravestone. Oh, what could have been? Ultimately, laziness will rob you of everything that you've wanted. It will rob you of the things that you desire the most. And it will take from you the things that you feel like you need because you haven't worked hard. And finally, number 5, the sluggard needs Jesus. The sluggard needs Jesus. So far, everything I've said this morning could be delivered in a lecture by any dad anywhere on the planet. Hard work is not a uniquely Christian value alone, though certainly it's a pretty fascinating study if you go and learn about the Christian or the Protestant or the Puritan, whatever kind of work ethic you want to throw in there. But the Christian work ethic is a real thing, and it's something to consider. But it's not a uniquely Christian thing. Lots of religions value hard work, not just Christianity. And everything that I've said today could be true if I were standing in a mosque, if I were standing if I were standing out on the street just giving advice to somebody, if I were out on a boat just talking to anybody, and all of what I said would be true. I could give this message anywhere so far. Lots of people, lots of religions value hard work. But here's the beautiful thing about the way work functions in the Christian life. In every other religion, work will be part of your path to salvation. In every other religion, you will have to work hard in order to atone for the sins you've committed, in order to atone for the infractions you've committed, in order to atone for who you are and what you've done. In order to make up for your laziness in the past, you will have to work hard in the future. And you just have to hope, if you work hard enough, that you'll achieve a certain place. Every other religion will have some variation of that. Work in some way, do certain things, and if you work in some way hard enough, then you might, maybe, when you get to that last day, you might have worked hard enough to atone for the things that you've done. Work isn't just about getting things done in other religions. It's about getting to God at all. This is what every other religion will tell you. That is not how work functions for Christians. Proverbs isn't telling us to stop being lazy so Jesus will love us more. If you hear me saying that this morning, you have missed the point that I am making. Proverbs is not telling us stop being lazy so Jesus will love us more. It's telling us to stop being lazy because that is not who God has made us to be. We have been created in His image and been given a task from the very beginning. Quickly, look with me in Genesis chapter 1. Turn there. All the way back to the beginning. Genesis chapter 1. I'm going to read from verse 28. And God blessed them, and God said to them, this is God talking to Adam, and God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Do you see that there in verses 28 and 29? Subdue the earth. Grow the vegetation. Grow food. Plant and have plenty. Work is not a result of the fall. Now, the fact that work is work, that's a result of the fall. The fact that work is hard, the fact that work stinks, the fact that you don't want to go to work, that's a result of the fall. Work is work. And it will always be work. Kids, I'll tell you this too. If you hear people telling you that you should do a job that you love, and that's the only type of job that you should ever do, you will be chasing after a job that does not exist. Because the understanding there is that you will only be doing something that you 100% love all the time, and there will never be a point where you say, "You know what? I really don't want to do this today. You know what? This kind of stinks." There is not a job that exists. I love what I do. But there are some days where I'm like, "You know what? I really just don't want to do this today." And I guarantee you, if you talk to anybody in here that's got a job, they would tell you the same thing. Even if they love what they do, there are days where they say, "I don't really want to do this today." Don't chase after this dream of a job that isn't hard, or this dream of a job that you only love, because you will be chasing a unicorn. Work is work, and it is hard. But the idea of work was always part of the plan. Before sin, before the fall, Adam was given work. It says that God gave these instructions, and then it says that it was the sixth day. And you know what came after the sixth day? That'd be the seventh day, the Sabbath. And right after this, God instituted the Sabbath. And you know what that tells us? You know what that tells us? God created a rhythm for us. God created rhythm for us. He gave us rest as a tool to fuel our work. He gave us rest as a tool to fuel our work. It's when rest takes over our life, demands our attention, and asserts itself as the king of our life, that rest is now moved into the wrong place in our life. You do not work so that you can rest. That's not a Christian understanding of the way this works. You don't work so that you can just rest, but you instead rest so that you can work. The Bible shows us that rest is designed to fuel us for our work. Work is good, and we should embrace hard work. I don't care how bad your job is. I don't care how awful your work is. And I know some of you are in some bad jobs and some of you have some bad bosses and you don't like what you're doing at all. But God has given us a calling to work hard no matter how miserable it is. Colossians 3:23 says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men." When we show up for work, when we do what we do not do it for others' approval. We do not, even if you're in customer service, you do not primarily do it for others' approval. You do it because you are working unto God. So God has given us work as a gift and as a calling. But he has not given it to us as a means of salvation. That work was done on the cross by Jesus Christ. He's the only one that could complete that work for us. If we could do it, if we could work hard enough, I think that God would have said, if you do X, Y, and Z, you will get to this place, and then I will let you into heaven. But what he says very clearly is you cannot work hard enough. There is no task you can do. There is no labor that you can bring. There is nothing you can do at all that will get you to heaven. Work is not for salvation. Jesus did that work for us on the cross. And do you remember what his final words were on the cross? "It is finished." The work is done. It is done. Now and forever. In Hebrews, it talks about how you look to Jesus and Jesus is seated at the right hand. He's seated at the right hand of the Father because his work is done. There is no more sacrifice to be made. All work is finished. The work of salvation. The work is done. So work hard as unto the Lord. Don't be lazy. Don't be lazy. But don't work for heaven. Because you'll never work hard enough to get there. Jesus has done that work for us. Come to him. Know him. And then respond in the way that he has created you. As someone who is built and made to work hard. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you for the truth of the cross. Thank you for what Jesus said, that it is finished. That there is no more work for us to do. Nothing left for us to do. We simply respond in the faith that you give us to the person of Jesus Christ. Father, help us to do what you created us to do. To be hard workers. To fill the earth and subdue it. Subdue it in the way that we teach students. Subdue it in the way that we lead others, subdue it in the way that we coach football, subdue it in the way that we create, subdue it in the way that we do so many different things. Father, help us to do that and to do it well. Father, when we go out in this community, may the people recognize how we work and know that we do it in your name. And it's in that name that we pray. Amen.